But when you've got someone like Michael Berry, who's putting his money where his mouth is, it's impossible to ignore that he clearly knows something that the vast majority of the public might not be aware of.
Hey all, this conversation is pure gold, if you pardon the pun. I was on location in London yesterday. I met up in person with Josh Saul, who is an expert in all things financial and also in physical precious metals, etc., but much wider expertise than that. And we had a great conversation on everything to do with protecting you and your family's wealth and pension going into the future in these uncertain times. So great insights, great discussion. I hope you really enjoy it. And also, there's a link in the description box below if you want to follow up with expert advisors on these matters. So here we go.
I'm here in London with an expert on macroeconomics, finance, and gold. Josh Saul, great to meet you in person.
Happy to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Excellent. And I know the viewers would be fascinated by actually getting the inside kind of story on precious metals and all the questions around those, because it's somewhat a controversial topic at times. And you're with the Pure Gold Company. I've got the name right, yeah?
Correct.
Excellent. So I was going to ask a couple of questions first, just from my perspective on gold. I've taken an interest for a few years. And a couple of the movements that happened in the last few years, one of them was in 2019, the Bank of International Settlements, which is the head of the central banks, and the central banks are private institutions, not governments, so it's the whole banking ultimate power structure. They moved gold from a lowish level right up to a very high level beside American debt, the dollar, sovereign debt.
Yeah.
So maybe that for me meant gold is really important because those guys are not going to be wrong. But how would you explain that massive move?
It was a big shift, and it's a big question. I guess just to kind of summarize, and just to go back for your viewers, and to summarize a brief history of the Bank of International Settlements. The first tier was set up to provide a solution to bad credit. The second tier was created, in terms of providing a solution to bad counterparties. What's the point in having an IOU if the person that's giving it is not going to be here anymore, right? And so in 2007 to 2008, they created the third tier, which was off the back of capital adequacy. 2007, 2008, which is when we saw Northern Rock collapse, we saw Lehman Brothers collapse. They termed it in the UK the credit crunch. And that meant that banks had to have a certain amount of capital, money, on their balance sheet, enough for customers that wanted to take money out of the bank, right? So enough money on their balance sheet for depositors to come and say, I would like my money back. And the fact that there wasn't enough money back in 2007 resulted in a run, the first run on a UK bank in over 100 years. The consequence was the collapse of Northern Rock. So tier three was about saying to banks, you need to have enough money on your balance sheet so that if something like this were to happen again, if depositors were to rationally ask for their money back, you've got enough money on your balance sheet to satisfy those demands. Now, in 2019, the interesting development is that they refer to physical gold as liquidity, as a liquid asset. So before 2019, they would say, well, you need to have enough cash on your balance sheet. But in 2019, what they held in absolute parallel was physical gold with cash, physical gold or allocated gold, right? So we're not talking about ETFs, we're not talking about electronic gold or paper gold or anything that would require an IOU by an institution or a government. We're talking about physical gold bars or physical gold coins, underlying asset classes that back the shares and the certificates that businesses give out to one another. The revelation is that clearly the banks, the government, and the world consider physical gold as liquid as cash. But in a way, the frustrating thing for a lot of the banks before 2019 was that holding cash, we know, isn't keeping up with inflation. And so, you know, a bank's objective from, you know, to their shareholders is to grow assets under management to make more and more money. Now, the more that the higher the requirement for them to hold more cash, the harder it is for them to do that because inflation's taking over and it's making their cash worth less. So the fact that they could convert their cash into physical gold as a way of being able to bypass inflation salvaged currency gives them the opportunity of keeping up with inflation, but also being able to convert it into a currency that they need as of when they require it.
Effectively, instantly, as you say, they defined it tier one, it's equivalent to cash, which is, and that's a great explanation for it. It makes absolute sense. And it does actually bring up another thing about gold. I think I was interviewing, was it Matthew Piepenberg, and himself and others, experts in this, they always say, look, it's not so much gold going up in a very real sense. It's all the fiat paper money and currencies, which are not real money. They're just currencies. They're IOUs. They're going down, down all the time. And that's why gold goes up in price, because they are going down. So I guess that's pretty much fundamentally it.
One of my favorite analogies is, and we often say it with clients that have little understanding of gold's history over the last century. But if we go back to 1970, an ounce of gold and a £20 note was worth exactly the same. You know, both could buy you a tailor-made suit on Savile Row in London. If we fast forward to today's values, that 1 ounce of gold is worth over £1,600. It's enough to buy you what you could have bought back then, but that £20 bill won't even cover you the fare to get into London to even see what you can't afford. And so some people will say, well, you know, gold has grown by 11,000% since 1970. I would hold the contrary view, that actually it's that fiat currency has devalued so much that it takes more currency to buy that same ounce of gold.
And that is precisely it. Actually, that just this conversation is rolling itself, because it brings to mind straight away that thing about purchasing power. Well, there's guarding your purchasing power, which gold certainly does, as we discussed. But then there's the other side of gold. Some people will buy it to speculate or try and match the S&P 500 or try and have it as an investment asset that may grow. Versus just keeping up and guarding your wealth, preserving your wealth. And I know a lot of people, including myself, it's more to preserve the purchasing power. I'm not really speculating on it. But what are your thoughts? Because there is a speculative element to it. And if gold goes through a super cycle in the next few years with the way the world is, it'll end up an actual very good investment growth thing as well. Or what?
So I completely agree with you. It's impossible to ignore the fact that gold has grown considerably. You know, if we look at the last 50 years, the S&P 500 has grown on average 5 to 6% after inflation. Gold has grown 7 to 8%. If we look at it over the last 100 years, we know that equities have outperformed gold. But then again, we know that no one really holds on to an asset class for 100 years. It's about, you know, taking advantage of an asset class based on where you are within that cycle. And so I want to avoid kind of getting too technical here, but it's a really, really interesting point. When we look at the value of companies, one of the metrics that analysts use or buyers use is the price to earnings ratio. The value of a share relative to the company's earning potential. So we now know that within this century, the price to earnings ratio is much, much higher than it was, you know, 50 years ago. You know, we've got the likes of tech companies who, you know, you buy a share in one of these tech companies and they're very, very expensive, but yet we know that they're earning very, very little money. In fact, it's quite the contrary. They're burning money every single week or every single day they're in business, but it's about future earnings. And so we get to a point where there is such a disconnect, such a big distance between future earnings and the value of a share that we see a market crash. Now, the price to earnings ratio right now for the S&P 500 is twice the median, right? So the median is around 15. Right now, it's above 30. Now, whenever we've seen over the last 100 years, the price to earnings ratio hit 30 or higher, we've seen the market crash from anywhere in between 20% to 50%. This has happened on five events over the last 100 years. And so right now we're sitting at around 33%. So if you're looking at the fundamentals, they suggest that we're likely to see some sort of a correction. I heard a talk the other day by a gentleman called Dr. John Hussman. He's a fund manager. And he said that at these levels, equities present nothing more than a reward-free risk. I like that. It stuck with me because effectively we're only going to take a risk if there's the possibility of a reward. And he believes that at these levels, there's very little risk. There's very little reward, but there's very, very high risk. The market would have to, in order to continue this trend, this price to earnings ratio trend, the market would have to fall by 45% in order to continue that cycle within the equity market. The market would have to fall by 65% to complete the historical fundamental. Again, I want to try and avoid being too technical because essentially all we're talking about is the value of a company relative to its earning potential and the fact that actually there's a massive disconnect at the moment, and that massive disconnect presents a huge risk for investors when deciding to take a punt with a particular stock or share, especially given that, you know, interest rates have increased, and actually some investors might think, well, you know what, I'd rather put my money in the bank or in a bond than actually risk it in a high-tech startup where I could make a lot of money, but chances are, you know, a lot of these tech startups fail.
Yeah, and you could just find yourself in a huge kind of cyclical correction, which you've described. And people can look up the PE ratio or price earnings ratio. And the beauty is nowadays, very quickly, you'll get summaries of it in articles. But a very important measure. And like, there's companies now well over the average of 30 price earnings. They're up nearly 40 and beyond. And then likewise, I think it's generally accepted, look for good companies that are down at 15 or 16, and they'll be more future-proofed. If the whole S&P comes down, they'll tend to be already where they should be. That's probably not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea. It's interesting. We were chatting before about a film that we both quite like, The Big Short. And they break it down very well. I'm not sure if they go into price to earnings ratios, but they talk about, you know, the bond crisis. They talk about, they break it down so that it's really easy to understand. The reason I'm mentioning it is because the gentleman that the film was based on, Michael Berry, who was within a small minority of people that saw the crash coming in 2007 and was able to capitalize from purchasing insurance contracts for very little money, because the market just didn't believe the market was going to crash. So he was buying something that no one else was. So I'm mentioning that because he has very recently invested $1.3 billion, give or take a couple of hundred million. Even feels weird to say give or take small a couple of hundred million, but small change in the grand scheme of things. He's bet $1.3 billion that the market is going to correct itself, the equity market and the bond market. And so you get lots of analysts and commentators making their predictions. And it's only hindsight that tells us if they're right or wrong. In some cases, the only certainty right now is uncertainty. And in a way, you know, those analysts or commentators aren't even blamed for getting things wrong, given how unpredictable the world has become. But when you've got someone like Michael Berry, who's putting his money where his mouth is, it's impossible to ignore that he clearly knows something that the vast majority of the public might not be aware of.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, it's rising now at the end of the year. And then in the first 5 days of January, the S&P kind of came down. And now it's kind of bobbing back up again. But I'd say there is one index, and you mentioned the PE. There's an index or kind of an algorithm, I forget the name of it, and it takes in the current PE of the S&P and a load of other factors. And it projects forward what you might expect in growth on your money in the next 10 years. I think it's semi-famous, I'm not sure. But right now it's saying, in terms of reward-free risk, it's looking at probably the next 10 years you can expect to kind of go nowhere on average.
It's the cyclical adjusted price to earnings, which the abbreviation is the CAPE, C-A-P-E.
That's it.
And it says that the S&P 500 over the next 10 years will actually generate you minus 4.2% after inflation.
After inflation. So accounting for inflation.
Accounting for inflation, adjusting it for inflation, you will be 4.2% worse off in 10 years if you put your money into the stock market today.
And again, we're not here to sell gold per se, but I'm just going on my own instinct. I've become very interested for several years, as you know. But in the next few years, if anything, nearly all analysts who specialize in precious metals and commodities are all expecting, might not happen, they're all expecting higher gold prices just because of the world geopolitical situation and countless other metrics. I mean, that's the likely outcome. But gold goes up and down as well, depending on really complex factors.
I'm under no impression that physical gold is one asset class that you need to hold for 50 or 100 years. I believe very strongly in a diversified portfolio. And so I'm a real life person. I have equities, I have bonds, I have a pension. And so I feel it like the rest of the market. When we see a 15 or a 20% fall in the value of equities, I feel that. And so for me and for a lot of our clients, you know, just to kind of make the viewers aware, you know, we deal with a lot of ultra high net worth individuals. We deal with professional clients who tend to work within this space. But we also work with people that aren't necessarily financially insightful, mainly because they do something else for a living. You know, they might be doctors or nurses or judges or what have you. We also work with engineers or postmen or people that sweep the street. You know, everyone has the, you know, one big question at the moment. And that one big question is, in the face of so much adversity, in the face of so much uncertainty, what does one do with their money? It's a really valid question. There've been times where some of the best minds in the world have been scratching their heads and saying, nothing makes sense right now, right? And it's true. You know, it takes a humble man to turn around and say, nothing makes sense. Actually, it would pay dividends right now, excuse the pun, to do nothing. To, you know, sometimes the hardest thing to do when you've got so much choice and opportunity in front of you is to do nothing. Equities, don't get me wrong, they present an unbelievable opportunity over the long term through compounding income through dividends being paid to you to grow your portfolio. But there's a time and there's a place. And as we've already discussed, through the valuation of companies and the fact that, you know, you've got various commentators that believe that the equity market is likely to collapse, the opportunity within the equity market, I would say, isn't today. The opportunity in the equity market, I would say, is coming. It might be 2 years, it might be 3 years. Who knows? But the rich get richer during times of uncertainty, right? We know that. And so whether or not we think that's right, we think that's wrong, it's a principle. And the reason why the wealthy get wealthier is that they're not motivated by the same fundamentals that the rest of us are, right? They're not motivated by urgency, right? I think over the last 18 months, we have become motivated and pressurized by reports on inflation. We haven't seen this for quite a few years, right? And so when we hear that actually our money is shrinking by 9%, we're starting to think, well, I need to do something with my money. I've got to put it somewhere, right? And when you start chasing opportunities, that leads to more wealth destruction than anything else. You end up with people making the wrong decisions because they feel like they have to make a decision. So when we move it to one side, because whenever we speak to our clients, we provide that consultative approach. We're running through the alternatives. You can't look at physical gold in a vacuum. It's a bit like you can't buy an insurance policy if you haven't got an asset to protect, right? Mm. You've got to look at the vast spectrum of alternatives. We know there's equities. We know there's bonds, right? The bond market is paying more than it ever has done. But that reflects a greater deal of risk, perceived risk and actual risk. But also not to forget that if you're putting your money into asset classes that allow you to take advantage of opportunities, either in property or equities or, you know, in other endeavors, your money is locked in. And so if a bond is guaranteeing a loss to purchasing power and it's locked in under a fixed term timeline, then you lose that agility.
And actually, bonds, interesting you mentioned that. I was looking at them for the last 6 or 12 months because, to another point you made, actually, in 21, I kind of moved my pension out. It's not a huge pension because corporate pensions are not great compared to, say, nurses' pensions or defined benefit. But I took it out and I was watching and waiting. And then things rose a bit. And the bonds I was looking at, because they were very attractive. But then at the same time, bonds in 22 and during 23, I mean, their value really came down as the rates went up. So like, no matter what you go into, you could end up getting in at the wrong moment, to your point. And then you get, well, catch a falling knife, I think is the phrase. But on the percentage of gold, my personal judgment from all the experts I had talked to your point again, 10, 15, 20% seemed to me a hedge to protect what you've got for your family and still have pension, equities, bonds to try and grow. Some people would see that as high. Some people would say 5% in physical gold. And then the real gold bugs would say 30 or 40. Now, that's very extreme. What's your personal thoughts on the percentage? And I don't want to tie you down to a specific. It varies depending on the person, their age and everything else.
There's a saying on Wall Street whereby 20%, you know, put 20% of your wealth into physical gold and hope that it doesn't go up. It might sound kind of upside down, but the fact that gold is going up is an indication that the rest of your portfolio is dipping in value. And so 20% or even 10% goes a long way when you see your equities falling by a much larger extent than the amount of gold that you got in your portfolio. Mm-hmm. Now, you touched upon before people purchasing physical gold for growth as an investment. And I think it's relevant to go back to that because it's all about motivation, all about objectives. The majority of our clients that purchase physical gold, whilst they appreciate there's growth there, they're doing it for safety, security, and wealth preservation. You know, what they appreciate is that their wealth is in something that is physical and tangible, something that tends to increase over and above inflation, something that tends to increase as commonly held assets like equities and property fall in value, but you've got it in an asset class that is capable of being instantly liquidated, the same as cash, the same way as, you know, tier three under the Bank of International Settlements regards physical gold, right? It's capable of being liquidated instantly and converted into any currency of your choice. And so when you look at the fact that people want safety and security and wealth preservation, and when you look at the alternatives within the market, people are liquidating properties or, sorry, selling properties because they fear that when the end of their product expires and they're going to be on a much, much higher interest rate, they're not going to be able to afford the interest payments that their interest rate will determine, right? A 300-400% increase in their outgoings is huge. Mm. Also, when you take into account they're paying 400% increase on their energy costs, I think that's somewhat gone down a little bit, but it's still very, very high. And so at that point, people are now starting to make decisions, either reactively, i.e. they've just realized their interest payments have gone through the roof and they're having to kind of do something. Do they take out more debt? Do they make compromises? Do they decide to kind of shop for their food in different places? Do they decide to go on less trips with their families? Do they decide to get rid of their second car? Do they sell their house? Ultimately speaking, you're going to find people selling property, downsizing, moving to different areas. So you've got the reactive, and then you've got the proactive, the people that can see this coming, and the people that are, you know, they're taking action now so that they're not on the back foot when the need arises for them to minimize their outgoings. And we're seeing a lot of this with clients at the moment. You know, people are now starting to look at where they might be in a year or 2 years' time, just so that when they're selling their property, they're not selling it out of dire urgency, because there's nothing worse than buying or selling when you are desperate, you know, for the proceeds of it. And so I believe, and we've already started to see, that oversupply of property is going to create a drop in the value of property. And so for a lot of our clients that have sold property and who have then sat in cash, they've seen the market as a huge opportunity to buy something, possibly at a discount to where prices are at the moment. The question is, how do they keep their powder dry? You know, where do they leave their money? If they leave their money in a bank, they're losing to inflation because inflation is higher than the banks are willing to pay you. The counterparty risk on banks is the highest it's ever been. You know, we talked about, you know, the need for the introduction for tier one, tier two, tier three on the Bank of International Settlements. It's because banks aren't or haven't been secure enough. And so, you know, if we accept that banks haven't been secure enough, and there's a commentator, there's Meredith Whitney, who predicted the crash in 2008. She believed there's going to be a huge consolidation of banks within the UK, right? When we look up that word, a consolidation, it's a conservative way for saying we're going to see a lot of the banks that we know within the marketplace not here in the next year or two.
Yeah, actually, of course, a euphemism for we're going to have a bunch of bank failures and the usual hoovering up of the small guys by the big guys or JP Morgan. It's coming, folks.
Exactly. Mm. And if you believe, you know, we know that money over £85,000 is not protected. In the US, it's far more. I believe it's $250,000. Mm. But we have a growing segment of the market that question whether or not anything below 85,000 is really covered, because deposit protection is academic. It's only tested in the worst case scenario, which we haven't yet seen. And so we know that there is a need to have a perceived compensation limit, right? And there's a benefit to us all believing that, because if we don't believe it, then there's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We don't give our money to banks. Banks collapse. And let's face it, you know, banks underpin the free market economies. We know it. Yeah. And so it goes back to what Dr. John Hussman says in terms of a reward-free risk. You give your money to the banks, you're receiving little return for more risk. And so going back to your question in terms of, you know, how much are people putting into gold? Traditionally, people will use physical gold as a hedge against the possibility of other asset classes falling, like an insurance policy. But in the likelihood or with the possibility of other asset classes falling and wanting to keep your powder dry, then we've seen clients over the last 12 to 18 months put in a much larger percentage of their capital in order to take advantage of other asset classes in the future.
Yeah. And but that's what I'm hearing again and again from who I perceive to be the best in the macroeconomics or the various interviews I watch and experts. The general consensus is now is the time to have dry powder, because the opportunity, nothing's certain, of course, but the opportunity when this thing turns over, the PE comes back down, there's probably a sizable crash and maybe a lot of other action going on. The person who has powder, like Buffett said, you don't make your money when, you know, things are all great and going up. You make the money when there's blood in the streets, even if some of it's your own. I think that was his phrase. So it's a very good place. Physical gold, the equivalent to liquid cash now from the BIS, along with maybe bonds of various types, is a great place to sit safely and keep up with inflation until an opportunity arises.
I agree with that. Mm. I think government bonds, they limit risk. If you believe that, you know, the government, you know, are going to honor that guarantee. I can't see any reason why scientifically they shouldn't, but you have a lot of people that doubt if they will. I think the only thing with bonds is that you lose some of that flexibility.
Mm.
If the perfect opportunity comes along and we don't necessarily get a memo for when these things are going to happen, you know, they just present to us on a random Tuesday afternoon. You get a call either from your wealth manager or a friend, or you see it on the news and you've got everyone selling something, and that creates the demand, that creates an opportunity for a minority of the market to start buying. That's where those opportunities come about. And that's why people regard and refer to physical gold as an alternative to holding cash, but in a way whereby you are keeping up with inflation and you have removed that counterparty risk.
Yeah, counterparty risk is another phrase people mightn't understand, but yeah, only when you really, really have something beyond any question, like having physical gold, is there no counterparty risk. If you're dependent on an institution, a bank that holds your money, a government bond that conceivably might not be honored in a dreadful scenario, all of those things are counterparty risk. The counterparty might have a problem and you're dragged down with them. Mm. And actually, I'm just going to pivot really quickly, because earlier I meant to mention, as well as the BIS, the European banks and Western banks in general, I noticed in the last year or two, or many years, perhaps 10, 11 years, they're increasing their gold reserves relative to their GDP, to their domestic output. And they seem to be increasing in the last few years more and more gold, which would tie in with the BIS stuff. But also the countries seem to be normalizing. The ones with less are going up to have the same ratio of gold to GDP. Now, the conspiracy-minded people would think, ah, they're getting ready for a partially gold-backed new system, perhaps. Or maybe it's just they're all covering their asses to the same extent. Well, what do you think of that one?
It's interesting. So we've seen a similar trend. To provide some of the stats, on average, central banks hold around 50% of their reserves in physical gold. Mm. But there's a huge difference between some, you know, some countries. So for example, Bolivia, 88% of their country's total reserves in physical gold, whereas Canada, zero.
I need that one.
So there's a huge difference between, you know, various countries. And so there are some countries that haven't normalized. We also know that China have added to their reserves over 11 consecutive months and also over the last 10 years. In 2023, we saw 1,136 tons of physical gold purchased by central banks, which is the single largest amount in history. And we've already seen that we're about 14% higher than we were last year. So we can certainly see that central banks are avoiding fiat currency, just because, let's face it, there's so much volatility in the market. You know, the greenback, the dollar, used to be a safe haven. It provided stability and comfort. But because of the volatility, people would much rather, when I say people, I mean central banks, would much rather have the stability of physical gold as opposed to the volatility of dollar or GBP or other currencies around the world.
Yeah. And the dollar, by all means, is still going to be the dominant currency of the world and the reserve currency for quite a long time to come. But it is beginning its steady decline probably now with the rise of the BRICS and more transactions going on in other currencies, in spite of US weaponizing the dollar disgracefully last year. But that's just going to hasten these massive changes.
But if you think about it, you've got, if you look at the pyramid of organizations and counterparties that are purchasing physical gold. You've got the central banks. You've then got the individual banks who are duty-bound to hold physical gold now as a means of being able to adhere with the new regulations. You've then got hedge funds that believe, well, if I don't have physical gold, then I'm not hedged enough. I haven't got an insurance policy in case things start to fall in value. And then you start to see high net worth individuals, professional traders, equity analysts that believe, well, actually, if you've got all of these other counterparties purchasing physical gold and you've got the banks liquidating out of their electronic positions in order to purchase physical positions, then clearly it's worth having physical. Otherwise, we're going to try and buy physical when there's less available. Let's face it, physical gold, you know, is a finite resource. That's why people hold physical gold, because its value, its intrinsic value, will never fall to zero. You know, you look at equities and you look at bonds and you look at other securities, pieces of papers, IOUs, they can fall to zero. You know, stripping out probabilities or possibilities, it's possible, right? Houses, less so. I mean, yes, you can have more debt on the property than the house is worth, and therefore you're upside down. But the actual value of a house is never going to drop to zero, because people see the value in what that house has to offer. The ability of creating yield, the ability of keeping you warm. It's a house, right? It's always going to serve a purpose.
Intrinsic value, essentially.
Intrinsic value. With physical gold, you know, there's only a certain amount of it available in the world, less so underground. And so it will take for human beings to explore and then extract and then refine that physical metal. And there's a huge cost to that, right? If we take into account inflation, the cost of energy, it costs us a lot more to adhere to that process. Insurance has gone up, so it costs us more to get the gold from A to B, right? Yeah. So when you look at all of the costs required to create an ounce of gold, they're going up along with everything else. And so when you take into account that the actual definition of inflation is the rise in cost of goods and commodities, or commodities and services, by implication, it includes physical gold, right? You get to a point whereby if the value of an ounce is less than the cost of getting it out of the ground, they're going to stop mining it. If they stop mining it, supply gets restricted. And at that point, you then start to see a normalization of its value. The price goes up again.
It's kind of self-correcting on every vector in the whole thing. There's no question about it. So, you know, I know we've got a kind of a target for the length of this, and you have a lot else going on. But I thought maybe towards wrapping up, what reason would there be not to have a portion, which could be 5, 10 or 15%, given that you have funds, you have pension, you have money, you want to protect for your family, for your future? What is the rationale to not have physical gold? And I'll be honest here, and I'm not being biased, I can't see the rationale not having some, unless A, you're just not aware of this, the whole kind of nexus that we talked about, or B, you are just more risk tolerant and you want to speculatively go for more gains by playing, you know, the equities, etc. Is there any other real reason not to? Is there a downside we haven't covered? It could be a rare occurrence of something that could mean gold is not a good thing to have. I don't know.
Well, in terms of providing that balanced argument, first of all, we know that the world has thrived off a decade of very, very cheap debt, right? And so we would never suggest for someone to borrow money to purchase physical gold, because essentially you're protecting something that you don't own, right? Gold doesn't provide income like other income-generating assets like property. Equities pay dividends, property can generate rents, and so gold doesn't do that. You know, with physical gold, it's all about capital preservation, capital appreciation. The other benefit, and we haven't mentioned this, is that under certain circumstances, if you purchase the right type of gold, i.e. UK gold coins, you don't have to pay any tax whatsoever on the gain, right? So that's a huge advantage. It's not an advantage to everyone because you may not be a UK resident. But going back to reasons not to do this, again, borrowing money, not a good idea. No. Again, you know, people that are more risk tolerant. Yes, I can see why people might decide to have a smaller allocation of physical gold if perhaps they are more risk tolerant. But actually, what we've seen over the last 18 months is people justifying taking more risk by having that hedge in physical gold, right? Mm. So if people are deciding to put their money into, let's think of something that might be really risky, like emerging market tech stocks, right? And you think, well, actually, the risk in these stocks is much higher today than it was a year or two or three years ago. But actually what you might decide is you might counter some of that risk with a hedge in physical gold to justify your decision to do it. So in the same way that hedge funds decide to take more risk because they owe their investors a return, they have to hedge it in something that will go up if you know the companies that they put their money into go down.
Yeah.
So those are some of the reasons that I would see a client not proceeding with physical gold.
Yeah, they make sense. And quite a few of those are really for somewhat more advanced investor types rather than the average person who's not going to use gold as almost like leverage to take high risk steps. So yeah. That's more a professional place. So I'd say that's excellent. I think we've covered the gamut. Is there anything else, Josh, you can think of that's particularly salient, maybe we maybe didn't cover, or any wrap up?
Well, I just wanted to add to the last point that we covered. You know, for people that are looking for explosive, predictable growth, you know, within you know, weeks or months, I would say that you need to be wary of any asset class, and that includes physical gold. You know, physical gold over the longer term has outperformed most asset classes. But within a short period of time, it's as volatile as lots of other classes, as lots of other asset classes. So for people that are looking for pure growth and not protection or wealth preservation, I would say one has to assess what they're trying to achieve. Mm. One has to be mindful of the fact that, you know, with physical gold, what you're not going to do is buy in today, sell next week, and then buy in again in 2 or 3 weeks time. Yeah. Right? That doesn't make sense. No.
Absolutely not. There are people who are speculating in that manner, but I think it's crazy. I'm fully with the philosophy that you espouse, and of course, or Matthew, or any of these people. And as it turns out, back a couple of years ago, I realized how crazy the world had gotten, became aware of gold, and I did move a sizable chunk of pension, etc., into it. It happens to have worked out very well, because obviously the pension has gone nowhere, and the gold has gone from 1550 up to, in euro anyway, 1860. But I never was going after that. I was doing it for the right reason. But likewise, I know that at 1860 now, some of my family's pension and wealth is in it, that could go back down to 1640 in a few months. It could do. But again, you need to, it's deep breath. You need steady as she goes. It's long-term guarding. That portion is long-term guarding, as you described. And you got to resist the temptation to say, ooh, it's high. I could sell it and buy it back in 6 months. And it might. Yeah, that's not the way you do it with gold. Yeah.
I would warn against that. Mm. But I think that in this sort of a market, there are lots of people that are very scared. And there's a minority of people that see the opportunity. And, you know, in a world where a very small minority of people thrive on really negative, terrible news, it's not all bad. There is opportunity out there. It's just, you know, one has to seize the opportunity and take advantage of what some might say are inevitabilities. And so I would say knowledge is absolute power. One has to read up upon all of the alternatives, not just physical gold, not just crypto, not just property, not equities, or, you know, it has to be everything in relation to one another. And the benefit that our clients receive from using us is we see the opportunity in all of those other asset classes. We see the opportunity in equities. We see the opportunity in property. We see physical gold as either a means of protecting wealth longer term or as a means of providing a stepping stone onto those other opportunities. And so we provide the market with a lot of research on the back of what clients are conveying to us in terms of what their motivations are. And that allows us to express to the market, this is what we're seeing, this is what the market's motivated by, and therefore this is what we're expecting in the next six months to a year. And our clients are therefore empowered with that information to take advantage of timing implications. You know, do I buy this now? Do I wait 6 months? Do I sell this now? Do I wait 12 months? And so knowledge is absolute power. You know, for anyone that has any sort of an inclination to learn a little bit more about physical gold or physical gold in relation to other asset classes, we have an opportunity for people to book in consultations with our brokers. There's no obligation to purchase, not least today. You know, we've got some people inquiring and they may well purchase, if at all, in 6 months' time. But the fact that they had that initial conversation, and it can be as brief or as detailed as the person wants it, it equips them with the impetus to make some sort of a decision, right? You've already started that journey. You don't have to act, but that information empowers you nonetheless.
Absolutely. I love empowerment, and I love empowerment driven by knowledge and information. In my own small way. I'll put the link down below to the Pure Gold company where people can avail of that. And Josh, it's been excellent. Delighted to be back in London. I was born in London, actually. I was only there for a year. But it's fantastic to meet you in person here.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So there you have it, folks. I had lunch with Josh afterwards. Great guy. Delighted to meet him in person. And so well informed. And as I mentioned, there's a kind of a discount link below if you want to follow up with the advisors in Pure Gold on all of these matters. The link does allow you to get access to the first year's storage, I think, free, though many people would go for, like I have to a large extent, physical ownership of the actual thing yourself. And that way, in the long run, you also avoid vault charges, etc. So these guys service worldwide. They have vaults all over the place, including in New York, American, UK, whatever clients, all good. And also, as Josh mentioned, full discussion, no ties, no hard sell on your whole kind of financial outlook. And they are able to leverage all of their high value clients and ordinary level clients, all of what those guys are saying, seeing, they put together and they do research and they publish on it. And it's all about getting people informed, especially, as I mentioned before, in these challenging times. So hope you enjoyed that and catch you next time.